I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me. And I'm going to speak about some product estimates, expanders, and sieving. And this is joint work with Shambhugin and Peter Sarner. So let me begin by defining what expanders are. So intuitively, these are highly connected sparse graphs, widely used in computer science. They also have many applications in pure mathematics. So there are several ways of making this notion of highly connected and sparse precise. The simplest and most widely used one is the following. So given a graph, so graph is a collection of vertices and edges, you define the expansion of a subset, so a subset of vertices, to be the ratio of the set of neighbors to the size of a subset. So these are edges between B and B complement. And then you define the expansion of a graph to be the minimum over all expansion coefficients of subsets of size at most 1/2. So this is the measure of connectivity. The bigger C is, the more highly connected the graph. Notice that it's positive if and only if the graph is connected. Now, of course, if you have a graph on n vertices, you can just connect all of them, and this will be highly connected. What makes the notion of expander interesting is that you impose the sort of conflict constraint of sparsity, and the easiest notion of sparsity to implement is to demand that the graph be k-regular, so each vertex has k neighbors. And the definition is, so we say that G sub n k, it's a family of k regular graphs, forms a family of expanders if Liminf of C of G and k is greater than zero as n goes to infinity. Now, the expansion coefficient is defined as a minimum over all subsets of size at most 1/2, and this is something which is difficult to estimate or to evaluate explicitly. And what gets the subject started is that there is an equivalent spectral interpretation of this condition. So associated with the graph, there is an adjacency matrix. So with ij's entry equal to 1 if ij is an edge and 0 otherwise. So this is an n by n matrix with a largest eigenvalue equal to k. And it is strictly greater than the second largest eigenvalue if and only if the graph is connected. And it turns out that this condition is equivalent to lim sup of lambda 1 of A of G and K be strictly less than K. So the second largest eigenvalue should be bounded away from K as n goes to infinity, or equivalent to, if you look at the discrete Laplacian, so this is Ki minus A, so delta is minus lambda I of A. So equivalently, lim inf of lambda 1 of delta of G should be greater than 0. So the first positive eigenvalue of Laplacian should be greater than 0. And it is a spectral interpretation that is used to construct families of expanders. And in fact, spectral gap is in a sense more important than the expansion coefficient. Now, it's not if you are given this definition, it's not obvious that these objects exist, if you think about it for a moment, and the sort of the field started in 1973 when Pinsker observed that random regular graphs are expanders. So if you think of it in terms of the second definition, what it means is that if you take a say large n by n matrix with three ones in each row and column and the rest of the entry is zero, then the largest eigenvalue would be three, corresponding to constant eigenfunction, but the second largest eigenvalue would be bounded away from three by a fixed amount independent of n. That's not how he formulated it, but that's the equivalent. And then in the same year, Margulis gave the first explicit construction using Kasdan property T. However, in some sense, the first family of expanders goes back to Selberg, who in 1965 proved the following celebrated result. So Selberg's theorem is that lambda 1 over xp is greater or equal than 3/16. So here xp is h mod gamma p. So gamma p principal congruent subgroups. And maybe I should write that lambda 1 over xp, let me write variational characterization of the first eigenvalue and it is through this variational characterization that the connection with expansion coefficient to isoperimetric constant is established. So Selberg's theorem says that the family of congruent surfaces forms a family of continuous expanders, so to speak, and from this it is easy to deduce that if you take a set of matrices, say a finite set of matrices in SL2Z, and you look at the Cayley graphs of SL2P with respect to the projection of this generated modulo P, form a family of expanders. So, yes, so F generating SL, thank you very much, SL to Z or finite index subgroup. Thank you. So a Cayley graph of a group is a graph whose vertices are elements of the group, and you connect two elements if and only if they differ by one of the generators. And this is also true. So Margulis is that this also true for SL. DZ, and the modulus does not have to be prime here. So the general fact when you combine Selberg's theorem with property T is that if you take any set of matrices in SLDZ and which generate the whole group of finite index subgroup and you project the modular N, then the resulting family of graphs is an expander family. Now, so there are groups. Which cannot be made. So these groups SLNP, as n varies, can be made into an expander family with respect to some special choice of generators. There are some groups which cannot be made into an expander family with respect to any choice of generators. For example, abelian groups or solvable groups of bounded derived length. And the basic problem that was posed by Lubotsky and Weiss in early 90s was to what extent this property of being an expander family is a property of the groups alone, independent of the choice of generators. So it turns out that in general, this is not this property of being an expander family is not a property of the groups alone. And there was a spectacular result of Kasabov in 2005, who showed that you can choose a generating set for a symmetric group with respect to which it is an expander family. It's easy to see that if you take a symmetric group is not expanding with respect to this generating set. So in general, it is not an expander property. However, for a linear algebraic group, linear algebraic groups, in particular for these groups S, L, and P, it seems like the answer to the independence problem is positive. At least for when you project from the B group, from S, L, and Z. So to indicate what is the issue when you change slightly this condition, let me state the following. So this became known as Lyubotsky's 1-2-3 problem. So if you consider the following generating sets in SL2Z, so the first one is 1 1 0 1 1 0 1 1 1 2 0 1 1 0 2 1 and SP3 1 3 0 1 1 0 3 1. So the Cayley graphs of SL2P with respect to the first two I expanders for I equals 1 and 2 by Selberg's theorem however this last one, so the group generated by the third one is of infinite index in SL2Z. So it does not come under the purview of Selberg's theorem. So you can see, so if you look at the fundamental domain for the second one, it looks something like this. But the fundamental domain for the last generating set picks up a piece of the boundary. So it's the fundamental domain is of infinite volume. Okay. However, you do get all of the SL2P when you project the third generating set, and more generally for SL and P, there is the following result. So this is a strong approximation theorem. So this is due to Matthews, Wasserstein, and Weisfeller. So if you have a set of elements, so let lambda be a finitely generated subgroup in SL and Z, which is Zariski dense. So which means that it is not contained in any proper algebraic subvariety. Then there exists a Q such that the projection of lambda is you get so it's onto it's SL and Q for all Q relatively prime with Q zero. So even though the group might be very sparse on the Archimedean level, when you project it modulo Q, you get everything. And the conjecture, which is essentially due to Lyubotsky and Weiss, is the following. So this means that for Q, which are relatively prime with Q zero, you the Cayley graphs of SL2, so let's put it SL and Q pi q of s. So strong approximation implies that when you project modulo q for all q relatively primes q0, you get the whole graph, so the graphs are connected. And the conjecture is that, in fact, they're strongly connected, so they form a family of expanders for q relatively primes q0. Okay, so that's Lyubotsky and Weiss conjecture. Now, so for if we staying in SL2Z, so the following is known. So so I showed in so this appeared in 2002 that if the Hausdorff dimension of the limit set of the group generated by S is big, then this is true for all moduli. But this is a very restrictive assumption. And so then with so in joint work with Bourguin, we showed that conjecture is true for prime moduli, and this uses essentially the result of Helfgott on the triple product in SL2P. And then in joint work with Sarnak, we proved it for Q square free. And recently, in joint work with Bourguin, we proved it for SLD Z mod P to the NZ. So this for D arbitrary, and but for moduli of the form Z mod P to the NZ. Now, let me just, so, and John is going to talk about this on Friday. Let me just sketch the general argument. So for let me sketch the argument for SL2P. So at the bottom there is an appropriate sum product result so in this case it's Bourguin at tau and Bourguin Libichuk Konyagin. So if you have A in FP which is not too big, then either a sum set or a product set is large. So this is a sketch of the argument for SL2P. So building on this, there is a result of Helfgott that A is an SL2P and not contained in a proper subgroup and not too big. Then it grows rapidly under multiplication. Now, from this, using 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 non-commutative Balogh Simrady governance lemma due to tau, you deduce the following property of probability measures on SL2P. So if you have a probability measure which is so the size, so the size of SL2P is roughly P cube. So if you have a probability measure which is somewhat spread out but not yet completely uniform and which does not put too much mass on any proper subgroup, then you get you get epsilon closer to being uniform after one step. Now from this you deduce that, so from this applied to, so if you now apply it to convolution associated with your generating set, you deduce that mu of L becomes epsilon away from being uniform after logarithmically many steps. And this implies that you have a, okay, the final step is that so the final step is so what we want to show, okay, so what we want to show is that lambda 1 of A of G of S is less than K, well 2K if S is 2K. So if you look at the trace of A, say to the 2L, you can write it as, on the one hand, the sum of the eigenvalues, and on the other hand as the sum over closed box of length 2L from identity to itself. Now this bound implies that you have that this is less than 2K to the 2L divided by P to the 3 minus 2 epsilon. And this is, on the other hand, bigger than multiplicity with which the first eigenvalues enter times lambda 1 to the 2L. And so when you combine this with the upper bound on the number of short closed geodesics or short closed cycles here, you get the desired bound. So that's the outline of the argument. In case of SLD Z mod P to the NZ, in fact you can sort of apply immediately the sum, you can immediately use sum and product structure on the Lie algebra level, and you also use the fact that your group is Darisky dense to produce a large set of commuting elements. So, but John is going to talk about this on Friday. Now, let me. So this is all I want to say about the thunder results. Let me turn to applications to sieving. And And So, to do that, let me first revisit the classical results and rephrase them in a slightly different language. So the Dirichlet theorem is that if I and B are relatively prime, then there are infinitely many primes of the form AM plus B. This is 1837. Now I can view this as an orbit. So let lambda be a subgroup of Z generated by A, so just translation by A, and let O be the orbit. So this is an orbit of B under the action of lambda. So this is another way of looking at this expression. And then the instead of saying that there are infinitely many primes of this form, I can rephrase it as saying that the set of primes is the Zariski dense in the orbit. Okay, so in dimension one, being the Zariski dense and being infinite is equivalent, but in higher dimensions it says more than being infinite. It says that the set is as algebraically rich as possible. Now this, I'm not doing anything new here, I'm just putting vintage wine in new bottles, so to speak. Now this has many generalizations. The following is can be sort of as a generalized, I would say, well, it's either Hardy-Littlewood or Dixon conjecture that Terry was talking about. So let lambda be a subgroup of ZK, and let B be in ZK. Then the set of primes is Zariski dense in the orbit if there are no local congruence abstractions. Yes, so this is, of course, the condition here as well. So if, so here it's simple. So that is for any q greater than 1, there exists an x in the orbit such that the product of the coordinates is in z mod qz star. So so what is known here is, of course, the case equals of k equals 1 is essentially Dirichlet's theorem. For k equals 3 and lambda of rank at least 2, this can be established using Vinogradov's method. And then for k equals 4 and rank of lambda, again, greater or equals to 2. This is proved by Green and Tao in 2006. This is their work on linear equations and primes. And as we heard, modular the conjecture on Gower's inverse norms, this is this will be eventually established for greater for all lambda of rank greater or equals than 2 and non-degenerate, that is not secretly encoding a binary problem. Now, okay, so what what you can do using sieve methods in general is that you can prove that you can using sieve methods you can establish conjecture one with primes replaced by almost primes. And you can also get sharp upper bounds on the number of primes in a ball of radius x. So to take an example, so if you take lambda to be say m 1 1 and b to be 2 0, then this is essentially twin primes problem, and so it's a result of Brun that so this is true for p 2 9, and so the best result here is due to Chern with say x1 in P and x2 in P2. Now this formulation suggests generalizations to non-abelian groups, and the simplest of which would be the following. So this can be sort of, let's say, conjecture 2. This can be sort of as SL2Z Dirichlet theorem. So suppose that lambda is in SL2Z. Non-elementary. And so let's take B in the 2, look at the orbit of B and the lambda, then there is the closure of then the primes are Zariski dense in the orbit if there are no local congruent. Okay, so so what we can show using the expander result is that conjecture is true with primes replaced by almost primes. No, 9 is only when delta is close to 1. And we can also give sharp upper bound in many cases. And more generally, so let me indicate a more general setting and how expanders come in. So the general setting is that you have some group which act as affine linear maps, say G of n. You have an orbit of, so B is in the n. So you have an orbit of B and the lambda, and you have a polynomial in Z of x1, xn. So you define the saturation number associated with an orbit on F as minimum R such that the Zariski closure of the, so say the Zariski closure of the F of X in PR, X in O, is equal to the risky closure of the orbit. So it's the smallest r such that the set of rmost primes is a risky dense for this polynomial. Now, so subject to, so basically this conjecture zero that I mentioned for Q square free implies that R of OF is finite for arbitrary n. Now let me indicate how expanders come in, and then perhaps I have time to give an example. So I can restrict myself. I can always find G1. So let's assume that this is free. And I'm looking at the orbit of B under lambda. So it looks something like this. So if I have a finite sequence summing up to X, the key sum that comes up that you have to have control over is the congruence sum. So you sum n for n congruent to d, and you need to have an estimate of the form beta dx, where this is multiplicative, and a remainder which is small compared to x. Now, if we write what this is for our sequence, so what we're looking for is AN of L. So this would be the set of, this would be the number of points in the orbit which are distance L from B, and on which the polynomial is N. The total number of points in this ball would be exponential. So this is so let's say for free group on three on two elements, it would be 2 times 3 L minus 1. And then what we need is an estimate of the form. So if I look at n congruent to 0 mod d, so this is a set of points on the orbit of what length less than L, with f of x congruent to 0 mod d. So the remainder, so what we need is a remainder of the form x to the gamma, where gamma is less than 1. Now, the multiplicativity of beta d is essentially a consequence of strong approximation theorem that I mentioned. And the fact that gamma is strictly less than 1 is essentially the consequence of expansion. So if you, if you apply the trace formula, you see that essentially for gamma to be less than 1, you need expansion for congruence graphs associated with an orbit. So you take points on your orbit, you reduce the modulo Q, and you look at G1 and G2. So this is essentially equivalent to expansion of congruence graphs associated with the orbit and these generators. Now, let me just give one example where this kind of problem comes up naturally. Well, this appears in nature. So this is integral Apollonian packings. So this was studied by Graham, Lagarius, Wilkes. Graham, Lagarius, Mallows, Wilkes, and Young. And this is the following object. So if you start with four mutually tangent circles in the plane, so let me denote it the curvatures by AJ. So this is an inverse of the radii, and there is a relation which goes back to Descartes between the curvatures, which is the following. So if I look at the following quadratic form, so if I look at 2a1 squared plus a2 squared plus a3 squared plus a4 squared minus a1 plus a4 squared, then this is 0. So this is a relation, between the curvatures, and if you start, so the integral Apollonian packing is that you start, if you start with four mutually tangent circles whose curvatures are integral, and you start filling in the lunes with circles which are tangent to the, so I put in the circle inside of each lune, which would be tangent to the three circles abutting it. So if I just look at the outermost one and fill in the inner one, so this is the circle which is obtained by reflecting. So if I take a circle which is tangent to these three ones and reflect the outer circle to get the inner one, then so A1 and A1 prime are solutions of this equation. So it's easy to see that this is equal to A2 plus A3 plus A4. Okay, so let me write one of the reflections. So the associated reflection matrix would be minus 1, 2, 2, 2, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 1. And the group of these Apollonian packings would be generated by S1, S2, S3, S4. So you just move this column to the second, third, and fourth place. So this is a group whose elliptic closure is OFZ, and the Hausdorff dimension of the limit set in this case is roughly 1.3. So the limit set in this case is just the complement of the circle obtained by filling in the circles. It's easy to see that, say, from Lax-Phillips, so in this case it's a result of Poisset, the number of curvatures which are less than or equal to t is c to the t delta. And if we denote the set of primes by j, so if pi of t is a set of prime integral curvatures, then, well, so first of all, you have this result that R0 of theta f is less, is finite for any f. And in this case, you can convert the combinatorial spectral gap result to the Archimedean spectral gap result to get, for example, the following upper bound. So you can get that pi of t is less than n of t divided by log t. And similarly for twin primes, you get that pi 2 of t is less than that to the log t squared. So that's an example of sort of these sparse problems coming up naturally. And I think I should stop.